This is Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Landry Football Podcast for this Tuesday, October 22nd. Much to get to today. Going to talk a little bit about the quarterback play in general, but how it is affected, how everything really flows to and from the quarterback in football, college, NFL. And it leads to the old quarterback gets too much credit, gets too much of the blame. We're going to get into that. I'm going to talk a little bit about this tightrope procedure that Tua Tagovailoa is going to have for the second year in a row. But it is a different ankle, and we're going to tell you what this does, what it means, and how it might have an effect on his availability going forward. And he, not only his availability, but the healing process and how it may affect him going forward. And I want to talk a little bit about different types of head coaches and how things, how different coaches do it different ways, but can still have a lot of success. But again, this is the Landry Football Podcast. I want to tell you about a couple of things. First of all, LandryFootball.com is where we break down the game of pro football, the NFL, from inside the film room, giving you a very unique perspective. So we want to check that out. It's where we can go into the details that we don't have as much time to do here and really focus on a lot of big picture items and issues. We also are here to answer your questions, and we've got a few questions that were sent in. How you do that? You go to LandryFootball.com, hit contact Chris, send me your question and say, Chris, this is what I have, and I want you to answer it on this podcast. Whatever the podcast is, you let me know. And we've got a few that we are going to get to. Hey, this podcast is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ. I'm going to tell you a little bit about them a little bit later, but I'm so excited. I want to tell you a little bit about at the top because this podcast is brought to you by those guys, great folks. And it's a brand new streaming sports news network. It's live 24/7 and costs you nothing. That's right. It's sports coverage that's always on, always free. It's focused on the game. Tons of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice. Had Mohamed Sanu trade today from the Falcons to the Patriots, all of that. I know that they do a great job at CBS Sports HQ. And don't forget, it's completely free. So you don't have the fake debates, just real sports for real sports fans, completely free. You don't have to log in or sign up for anything. So you just download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. I'm going to talk about them a little bit more here in a second. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the quarterback situation around football. And as it relates to a veteran quarterback, a young quarterback, a college quarterback, an NFL quarterback, certainly the NFL, it is the toughest craft to master. It's the toughest position to play, I believe, in all of sports. Certainly in our game of football, it is extremely difficult. When you look at the complexities of playing the position, what you are asked to do mentally and absorb, and what is understood, or better yet, what is misunderstood about the game of football by fans and media, everything is going to go towards the quarterback. Hey, his record is 5-2, as if he's a starting pitcher in baseball or a pitcher in baseball. It doesn't work that way. You don't win games. It's about how you're able to play and perform in the environment of which you're put in. And that is how you evaluate quarterbacks. Everything, how you play in every aspect of the game affects your quarterback. For example, certain quarterbacks can do more to carry their team when you're not really good. Let's take somebody like Aaron Rodgers. Past several years, the team around him has not been all that good. It has been very ineffective on defense. Offensive line's been spotty. Not much of a running game. But Aaron Rodgers puts them in a position to make plays and very often have gone to the playoffs with him kind of carrying, but can't go very far. You know why? Because in a team game, a really elite quarterback can put his team on his shoulders and get him to a point, but not good enough. John Elway got some 8-8 looking Denver Bronco teams into the playoffs, but he couldn't win it all. Why? Because they weren't good enough around him. When they got good enough around him, when the defense was pretty good and the running game was pretty good, Elway won 2 Super Bowls. So is it Elway? Is it not? Is it the quarterback? Of course it's the quarterback play, but the quarterback play alone is not enough. And the play around the quarterback is not enough. It is a team game, the ultimate team game, but everything funnels around the quarterback. So, if you, for example, play really good defense and you're good on special teams, you're very often playing with a good field position. And you're in games in which you're either are leading or in a one-possession game to where your entire playbook is open to you. You play in very manageable down and distance situations. The game is easier because you're not having to force the issue. You understand that a punt is not a bad thing. You punt it, play good defense, get off the field. Now you got better field position. That's the hidden yardage that we often talk about. On the other hand, if you're down in a game early, you have to try to come back, force things. Well, the quarterback will force things, and when you force things, it is going to lead to mistakes. So you have to understand that, and you have to recognize that the play around the quarterback will affect how the quarterback plays and how he grades out. So the quarterback makes decisions. He makes better decisions when the team plays well around him, when the protection's good, when you've got guys that get open, guys that make plays for you, when your defense keeps you in games. All of those things allows your quarterback to make better decisions. Looks like a smarter player. Makes better throws. Well, when you're under pressure and trying to force things, you don't want to take a negative play. You're more likely to throw off your back foot. And worse gets worse. Case in point, Sam Darnold Monday night against New England. Did he play poorly? He absolutely played poorly. No, they played poorly around him and he played fine. No. He played poorly. He made bad decisions. Okay, and it's not, it's somebody else's fault other than him. No, he made bad decisions. He used bad mechanics. They did a bad job schematically of helping him out. But it's all a byproduct of the team around him led to his play. And he didn't help it out. In fact, he did worse than not help it out. He hurt it big time. It's important to understand that. Josh Allen is playing very well for the Buffalo Bills. Another young quarterback. Why is he playing well? Well, he's doing a good job. They're doing a nice job with him. But it's also important to understand that they're playing really good defense. Running the football pretty well. Well, when you do those things well, your quarterback, again, better field position, better down on schedule a little bit more, better down and distance situations. So the quarterback plays better when he is in a position to play better and make smart decisions. It's like anything else. You're going to make better decisions in anything that you do if you think it over, if you're calm and you're rational, if you're in a very volatile situation, in a very emotional situation, you're more likely to make a bad decision. Well, at the quarterback position, under pressure, under rush pressure, under the pressure of the moment, well, the guy does a bad job under pressure. Well, why does he make the bad job under pressure? If he does a bad job under pressure because he doesn't process information well, that's one issue that you've got to correct with him. If it's because, and Sam Darnold was caught on mic saying, "I'm seeing ghosts." Well, what it really means is he was completely confused by what they were doing. The pressure was coming at him with a lot of zero coverage looks that were very unique. He hadn't seen before, and all of a sudden there are things that he saw that weren't really there. It's not he was scared. That's what people took it as. He's not seeing what's truly there. And that is the most important thing to learn from that type of environment is got to be better at being able to process and see things. But you also got to do a better job as a coach to develop and get the ball out of his hands quickly, build some confidence, create some opportunities. That is a big part of it. And I think that's important to understand, too, when you're talking about, you know, at the college level and what you can do. People are questioning, for example, Jake Fromm at Georgia. Well, they should have kept Justin Fields. Look at his numbers and Jake Fromm's numbers. Completely different scenario. At Georgia, the receivers are not very good. They're not getting open. Therefore, people are crowding the run game. And Jake Fromm is not able to make the type of plays because guys are not getting open for him. Therefore, he's not playing well. He's not good enough. We kept the wrong guy. Well, if you're going to just run around, let a guy run around and make plays, that's what Justin Fields can do. And he can also throw it off that run game. But you've got to have that type of an offense and a type of structure, and that's not what they do. Understanding the play around the quarterback helps you understand the play of the quarterback and understands any quarterback, the best ever, are always aided by the play around them. And again, it's always filtered around them. But it's also important to understand that it is not that the quarterback gets off the hook for bad play, but the quarterback is the one that's taking the bullets because he's the one throwing the picks. When the picks are the direct result of bad decisions that he might make and bad throws that he might make, but is not understood some of the protection issues by the line, by the backs, by the play call, by the receivers not winning in coverage enough. All those things have a tremendous impact on a player's ability to have success from the quarterback position. But it always has, and likely always will, be affected, the perception of the quarterback be affected by the results and will be, again, attributed too much success and too much failure to the position itself. And the position is extremely important because they touch it on every play. And you can have good play around the quarterback and the quarterback fail. But very often, if you look at the success, you look at the failure of the quarterback play, it is directly correlated to the play that's connected with him. So keep that in mind. I want to also talk a little bit about head coaches. And, you know, there are different types, and this particularly pertains to college football. Overall, the NFL is a more of a schematic league. It is more about how you scheme up week to week and how you build your philosophical approach from a schematic standpoint, one team versus another. Of course, it's the ability to execute a scheme. It is important to understand that you've got to have personnel to execute what you want, and better personnel allows you to make more plays executing whatever scheme you choose to run. The college game is more to do about recruiting and building your philosophy. So in college, if you're at a major program, the coaching impact will have an effect on, depending upon your schedule, 2 to 3 games. You don't need to play, you don't need to be schematically have an advantage to win maybe 9 games out of 12 in certain, maybe 10 out of 12, maybe 11 out of 12 in some. Again, depending upon your schedule and your relative success of your roster versus another. It is more about your schedule and more about recruiting. And again, those few games will be determined by your ability to maximize that. It's more about building a culture, more about building a style. How we run our passing game, how we develop our blocking scheme, how we run our defense. Your scheme will allow you, pardon me, to do that on a week in, week out basis where you don't have to change a whole lot of what you do week in and week out, which fits the college game. Because in a 20-hour work week and with amateur players, you're not going to be able to modify and change it up as much as you would at the pro level with pro players that have been around a long time and are doing this full time. So it's a different environment that we've kind of gone over. But at the college level, they're different type of guys. And I always do this because we're at the time of year where certain programs are frustrated with their coaches and certain programs love what their coaches are doing. And most people don't understand that a coach is like a player. You evaluate a player like you do a coach. If I sat there and said Peyton Manning was not very athletic and he wouldn't be very good running the football more and he'd be a better quarterback, you know, he wasn't really good at running it. Well, that's not a criticism of him. My gosh, he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback because of what he did as a passer and a decision maker. It's just simply accurate to describe what made him really good and the fact that he wasn't real athletic. Same with Tom Brady. Or, you know, they're different skill sets. What makes, you know, Jonathan Ogden a Hall of Fame offensive left tackle versus what make Anthony Munoz an Hall of Fame left tackle were two different skill sets. They were built differently. They played the position a little differently. They both were Hall of Famers. To accurately describe from a scouting standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, what made them different is not a criticism of what a guy didn't do or did do. It's painting a clear picture from a intellectual football standpoint, what made them successful. Well, the same thing applies in coaching. There are different ways to go about building a program and having success. When you are talking about coaching, when I do a lot of coaching search work, there's a different ways, and you can have different guys. I don't believe that you should limit yourself to. This guy's a great offensive guy. This guy's a great defensive guy. Get the best leader. Get the best guy that can command a room, that build a culture. If you're a coach that is not a great X's and O guy, he must be good at being able to identifying, and recruiting, and you must support him administratively to pay whatever it takes in the going rate to have the best assistants that can handle the parts of the game that he's not as good at. You cannot get away with having gaps in your ability to coach and develop. Like water seeks its level, you will be exposed if you are missing certain pieces. No one, I don't care who it is a perfect coach. Never has been one. But the ability to be able to hire well to cover up the gaps where you're not as good is pivotal. A lot of great coaches were, you know, Steve Spurrier was really good running his offense. He was not very organized. He was not a great recruiter. And he knew very little about defense. You know, you could make a case he was the third best coach in SEC history and one of the best of all time and a Hall of Famer. He hired well. He didn't always hire well, but when he got the right pieces together, it just worked tremendously well. Nick Saban, the best of today, is a great culture builder, great, meticulous, detail-oriented guy, and he's really great at putting together and teaching defenses and knowing from the offensive standpoint what is going to complement, what's going to work well and play, and it's very adaptable. Running the type of offense that he runs now is not ideally what he's always believed in, but is what he's adopted to because of the game and the rules. He sees big picture, and he hires guys with an understanding of what he wants them to do and how he wants them to do it. He lays the foundation of what we want to be, how it needs to look, and he's going to hold you accountable for doing it. He's touches more areas and has more areas of strength than any. Therefore, it's important who he hires as assistants, but important that he hires really detailed-oriented guys and hard workers that are young and hungry. Chris Landry here for CBS Sports HQ, the brand new streaming sports news network. It's live 24/7 and costs you nothing. That's right. It's sports coverage that's always on and always free. CBS Sports HQ is coverage always focused on the game. Tons of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice, and something we care about deeply here, gambling picks and analysis to get that extra edge. Don't forget, you can get access to all this great coverage completely free. Not for a week or a month, but completely free long term. It's totally completely free for everybody. You don't even need a login. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time to watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just sports for real sports fans at a great price of completely free. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. I have recommended guys to him that were more experienced than some of the guys he's had, and it didn't work out. Why? Because they felt like they had more of the answers. They felt like their style was more important than what Alabama does it, and that's not the way you're going to work there. If you're not going to be the hardest worker, and you're not going to be able to absorb and learn and do it the way Nick wants, then it won't work for you, and it won't work for him. So it doesn't matter how much you know as much as what you're able to do and how you're able to do it and how you're able to handle the pressure of the moment. That's what's important for Nick. You can't just put anybody there to work under Nick because he's tough to work for. He's demanding. But he does a better job of coaching the coaches better than most. He doesn't need the finished product. He can develop the coaches, and that's why he can go in different directions because as long as he's there, they're always going to be successful. Maybe they won't win the title every year, and maybe lacking an experienced guy here or there in the staff may hurt their ability to ultimately win the title, but it won't have an effect like, oh, all of a sudden they're going to go 8-4 one year. They can make bad hires relative to what he wants, and they still make the national playoffs, still make the championship game. It's maybe not good enough, and it's not sustainable because, again, people go there to learn and then move on. So he's going to have to constantly develop. So necessity is the motherhood of invention. He needs to be that way, and he's that way because that's kind of what he needs to be to facilitate how he does things. He's really good in that regard. You've got other guys that are delegators. Ed Orgeron's having great success. Dabo Swinney's had great success. Neither one of those guys are really good X's and O guys. Now, people will take offense. Oh, he doesn't get enough credit. No, he's great at what they do. And they deserve as much credit as anybody for recognizing who they are, what they know, and what they don't know, most importantly. Ed has a great staff. He's put together the right combination. It hadn't always worked that way, but he's learned from his mistakes and is willing to move on from his mistakes. He's got great financial resources to which to hire a lot of people on his staff. So he has now a good offensive coordinator set up, a good defensive coordinator set up, pretty good recruiting staff. So they recruit well. They're developing a little bit better than they did under Les Miles. And obviously they have kind of a right fit. Now, is it long-ranging success? We'll see. Can Joe Brady be as good of a coordinator next year? Because he'll likely get the title if he chooses to stay, which he probably will. Will he be as successful without Joe Burrow? Don't know. But Ed understands you need to find the right offensive guy. And Ed, you know, while he's a defensive line guy, need to find a really good defensive line coach, a really good secondary coach, really good defensive coordinator. Ed allows Dave Aranda to run the defense, and he allows the offensive staff, Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger in the current setup, to run the offense. He has a guy like John Robinson, the great ex-Ram and USC coach. He's like an advisor that literally watches tape, goes to practice, goes to the games, and meets with Ed every Monday to go over what he saw and what he thinks, giving him a head coaching perspective, real unique. That is greatness when you can suppress your ego and not think you have all the answers. When Ed went to Ole Miss, he micromanaged everything. He wanted to coach every position, and he failed miserably. He didn't know what he didn't know. He learned that he didn't know what he didn't know. And he has now, with greater resources and greater understanding, that, and I think a lot of it had to do with he was on the staff and saw Les Miles and saw Les being stubborn, unwilling to change. Les Miles could be having the same type of success. Les Miles is not doing a bad job at all at Kansas, all things considered. But he's at Kansas and not at LSU because he wouldn't modify. He wouldn't adjust. He wouldn't embrace some change on offense, and it got him fired. And, you know, Ed may or may not win a national title. But he's modifying and adjusting and has an understanding. Ed knows that he wants to be someone that can sell the program, be the face of the program, be Mr. Louisiana, add his input to maybe, you know, what he sees from an offensive defensive standpoint. But he knows he's not the most qualified one to call the defense, run the defense, come up with a defensive game plan or offensive game plan or special teams game plan. He understands that. That is what's making him successful. It is what has made Dabo Swinney successful. Dabo's never called plays. He's not a great offensive mind. He's certainly not a great defensive mind. He's the same thing. Culture building, world of excitement, fun, selling and building culture. Great at that. But he delegates. Now, he's a little bit more, you know, thin-skinned when it comes to what he is and what he isn't. He likes to kind of purport himself one way, but deep down, he doesn't have as much of an ego, and that he understands that this is what makes him successful, is people that know more about the offensive and defensive side than he does. Now, what's the difference? Well, the difference is if an Ed Orgeron or a Dabo Swinney or people like that, James Franklin is another one like that, that if they lose those guys on the staff, that program could really dip or really shoot up depending upon the assistant. If you think about it, why is LSU that much better? Well, Joe Burrow and Joe Brady. Now, Ed Orgeron deserves credit for bringing him in, but it's not like Ed Orgeron has come up with an idea and implemented it. He's hired somebody to come up with the idea and implement it, which he's a part of it. He's not the real guy doing the heavy lifting on it. Dabo Swinney loses a coordinator, loses Brent Venables. He's going to have to hire just as well. If he doesn't, there's going to be a drop because Dabo can't go in and really have an input to make them better. He's going to have somebody, hire somebody to allow them to be as good or be better or make the transition. Saban, last year, made a bad hire as defensive coordinator and went through it. No one really noticed, and they went all the way to the national championship game. There's a stability there, and if Saban has to turn around and make the changes on his staff, which he does every year, they're still steady as she goes. They're still top of the college football. Well, the only variable is whether they win the title or not. But they're going to be great. Oklahoma, different look under Alex Grinch defensively. I mean, Lincoln Riley is a great, brilliant offensive mind. He also did a nice job hiring Alex Grinch. Lincoln doesn't have any input on the defense other than the fact that his offensive style sometimes put his defense in harm's way. Lincoln's not, he's delegating that defensive side. Ryan Day, to a large degree, doing the same thing at Ohio State to the defensive side. But being a head coach, you can be on one side of the ball, you can be a great leader, you can be a combination. Very few are the combination. Saban's the anomaly there. That's why they've been the most consistent. Because he can withstand changes because of what he can teach in terms of coaches. Ed Orgeron, Dabo Swinney, James Franklin, Lincoln Riley's not going to coach a defense coordinator how to run a defense at Oklahoma. Ed Orgeron's not going to be able to coach an offense coordinator or defense coordinator how to do it. Dabo Swinney, James Franklin, same thing. But they'll hire guys well. So there are different ways to do it, and you can be as successful. And I think it's really important. I also think that there's something to the effect of, from a football standpoint in the NFL, I think this is why, personally, football people, and football people are designed as coaches and scouts, in my view. They're the best people to run front offices. Because if you're a non-football guy, then, you know, like in the Raiders with Mayock, who's never coached, never scouted, the head coach runs it. If the head coach runs it, well, then you're going to be you're going to take your cue from the head coach, and you're going to win and lose because of the head coach's personnel decisions. It's why if you can be really effective as an evaluator and a good football guy, you can work hand in hand with the football coach. The transitions are easier. The adjustments are easier. You start to see football the same way, in the same vision. Not you have to agree on every player. That's not seeing it the same way. What's seeing it the same way is, this is what we're looking for in our offensive linemen, in our defensive linemen, in our linebackers, in our secondary, in our receivers, in our running backs, in our quarterback. You know, how we want to do things in a weight room. You have to have that vision that's a shared vision and understanding of it. Not just, you know, but what we see in a lot of cases, these head coaches where the guy who's the GM, he's the GM in title because he's the gopher boy for the head coach, so to speak. That guy doesn't implement any philosophical approaches. He just merely carries out the orders. Well, that brings about some limitations. Brings about some limitations that that doesn't really help grow your franchise. And that's why you live and die with certain decisions. That's why I think the best people are football, best general managers are football people, because you've got an added sense of somebody that can train. Just like good coaches can coach the coaches, good general managers ought to be able to coach the scouts, coach the personnel directors, help them to improve their jobs. Well, how are you going to do that if you've never done it yourself? And that leads to problems. So guys like John Elway, that's not a football guy in my mind. Being a great football player doesn't make you a football guy. Football guys in the sense of in the football world are coaches and scouts that see the game that way. Ex-players who never coached and scouts are not football guys. They may be football tough guy type guys, but they're not football. They're not the football cerebral minds that I think is important to building a team. And I think that's really important. Got a couple of questions, but I want to talk a little bit about the the tightrope procedure that's being done on Tua and was done on the other leg last year. It's an interesting thing that's being applied now. Not many people are doing it. It was brought in by an Irish doctor. What it is, they take it's called a tightrope, and they take a high-strength suture instead of metal screws. And what they do, the suture is pushed and secured between two metallic buttons placed against the tibia and the fibula at the ankle. So, see, a high ankle sprain is not the ankle. It's just above the ankle where the tibia and fibula are connected. And what happens is the tibia and fibula are kind of separated. It could be fractured, but in most cases it's not. It's just separated. So visualize that you're kind of opening your hands a little bit, or, you know, the tibia and fibula opening. What this does, they drill it in, and with a high-strain suture, bring them in together. That does two things. It can heal the soft tissues that are associated with fractures or sprains. It doesn't fix the fracture, but it heals the soft tissue because it brings it together. And here's the best part about it, two things. It makes the healing process that much quicker, one. Two, it really, I won't say eliminate, but it's significantly, at least in the early stages, it significantly reduces the likelihood that you're going to have a high ankle sprain in that particular foot again. So it's not something you want to do preventatively. You don't want to go in and do it if you don't have a high ankle sprain. But if you have a high ankle sprain, you go in and do it. A, it makes the healing process quicker. B, it likely, if doesn't eliminate, reduces significantly of it happening again to the same one. So it provides more stability and, again, the shorter rehab time, and regains the normal motion of the ankle. So unlike screws, the sutures can stay in the body indefinitely without the chance of breaking, whereas you can have breakage with screws. So it's an interesting process that I think is we'll see how it works again with Tua. It was a problem last year. Tua was not healthy last year and contributed to maybe some of the problems down the stretch for them. Without Jalen Hurts, they don't win the conference championship game last year. All right, I'm going to finish up with some questions. Chris asks, what defensive schemes have you seen over the years that are effective against Winston and Mariota? There's not any specific schemes. With Winston, you bring pressure and you mix coverages. Any zone coverage is going to confuse Jameis Winston. He'll throw the football up for grab because he doesn't have great vision. And he forces the ball in places where it shouldn't. So if you put a little pressure in his face and you can bait him into coverages, and you can do that a lot with some off coverage. You can play press man and roll over the top and you know, show it late. He'll miss it more consistently. But he gets confused a lot in different zone looks. And any combination man-zone really confuses him. With Mariota, is a little bit different. He protects the football whether better. He's not as confused, but he's not very accurate, and that's contributed to his ability to move the team consistently. Richard also asked me, what was my assessment of Ed Hockley as a referee? I think Ed was a good referee. I think he was probably a little bit more known for other things. I thought he did a solid job. We didn't have particularly negative grades on him. Was he one of the best referees? No, but he's very solid. And finally, Richard asked, what was your scouting evaluation of Kevin Faulk out of LSU? Well, I've known Kevin since he was in high school. Kevin was very instinctive, very physical for a young guy with his size, with a lot of shake, with a lot of wiggle. Was very good at creating after contact yards and avoidance yards. He was a special player, you know, high school quarterback, big time playmaker, just phenomenal player. And he was really good at LSU on a team before LSU became really good. He was in the DeNardo era and he did a tremendous job and was very good in the NFL. You know, with the Patriots, he was outstanding. He was versatile. He fit in a role of being able to do multiple things very well. He was good in blocking. He was good as a pass receiver. He's an outstanding player. So I had a very, very good grade on Kevin coming out of college and really liked him coming out of high school, as I mentioned. Hey, again, want to remind you and tell you about our good friends at CBS Sports AQ. It's great, brand new streaming sports news network. It's live 24/7. It costs you nothing. That's right. It's a sports coverage that's always on. It's always free. It's always focused on the game. Tons of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice, something we care about deeply, gambling picks, analysis to get the extra edge. I know when I turn on CBS Sports HQ, I see the tips and trends. I need to win my bets. And don't forget, you can get access to all this great coverage completely free. I don't mean free for a week or a month. It's free. You don't even need a login. So just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, any other connected device at any time to watch CBS Sports AQ. No fake debates, just sports for the real sports fan at the great price of completely free. Can't get cheaper than that. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. Appreciate you joining us, folks. And again, a reminder, check out LandryFootball.com for all the latest film room breakdowns. And, you know, we've got our special in-season football discount. So take advantage of that today. We appreciate you joining us. Talk to you again next time on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.